Hi, this is Chris Dancy, the world's most connected person, and you're listening to Codeless.
I took an hour to build it. It was only when Nextdoor reached out to me that I actually published it to the universe.
Like, let's share, let's open source, bring this to every single community across the world.
Basically, a short cast is a very short podcast. It's usually 2 to 3 minutes long. And
if you're new in business or you've been in business for a while and you want to know if you're doing the right thing just shows up.
My prediction would be an explosion of B2B SaaS businesses built by founders who are literally hiding in plain sight around us.
No code gives us the opportunity to exploit and share our values and beliefs with each other on demand.
So I feel like no code, it's like, it's a new branch of life that opens. It's a new way of thinking.
Hey, welcome to episode 13. What a time, right? This COVID-19 pandemic is really wreaking havoc. In the meantime, governments, cities, and companies are trying various solutions to flatten the curve and lessen the economic impact. In this episode, I want to get into what neighborhoods are doing to localize the COVID-19 response and what you can do specifically to help your neighborhood defeat this virus. On today's episode, we have Chris Dancy from Texas to talk about the COVID-19 response template he created, not just for himself, but for anyone else who wants to copy his solution. We also have David Peterson from Airtable's London office, as well as Armel Beaudry from Treble.fm, founded in Canada. We dive into the current pandemic, figuring out how to thrive in an environment of information overload and using technology to become the best versions of ourselves. This episode was recorded about a week ago, and we also have video that we're going to be posting to our new YouTube channel so you can see screenshots from Chris's tool. We're also going to post links to the important information we discuss in the episode. All right, we're going to get a brief intro from Chris and roll right into the interview. Enjoy.
Hi, my name's Chris Dancy. I live in Houston, Texas. I'm known as the world's most connected person. Seriously, Google, most connected. I developed the Neighborhood COVID Response System on Airtable and powered by Nextdoor for communications.
Thanks, Chris, for joining us on the Codeless podcast. This is really cool to have you, but unfortunately, it's in very dark times with COVID-19. And the reason I wanted to have you on is I literally saw something you posted on Twitter about a project that you're working on. But before we get into the project, let's just have you introduce yourself and tell us what we don't know about you.
Well, I always joke that I give good Google. If you just Google most connected, just those two words in any country on earth now, I come right up. About 12 years ago, I was extremely unhealthy, smoked a lot, drank a lot, a whole bunch of things. And it dawned on me, if I knew as much about myself as the cookies in my web browser, I probably could make a big difference. So instead of becoming anti-privacy, I became pro-behavior. And I spent about 3 years doing which now is called low code, no code. Back then there wasn't a term for it. Ways to just harvest my data and put it into a repository and then make it viewable. That repository is Google Calendar. It also is a great way to view data. Somewhere around 2012, after about 4 years of doing this, I was at a conference and a guy sitting behind me was from Wired magazine. He saw my screen and he saw that whenever I typed anything, my calendar would fill. He's like, how is that happening automatically? And I kind of showed him the back end. He goes, why are you doing this? And I told him a little bit about my story. He said, what have you done? And I just started telling him all these things, which today we would know as normal IoT, but I was using these feedback loops to actually develop myself. So if I was spending too much time doing a particular activity, I would get push messaging to my computers and things. Between 2012 and 2014, I went from a SQL DBA, I'm 52, to like the cover of Business Week magazine in 2014 as the most like disruptive thing outside of Silicon Valley. But again, 2014, even though it seems recent, was still way early for no code, low code, low code, no code.
Tell us about the reason why we're here, the project that, you know, you're working on. Let's start with that.
I've almost been going around the clock doing remote Zoom sessions with people setting up the system in different parts of the world. So it's crazy how many people are replicating what I've built for their communities. So just thank you for anyone who watches this, who's reached out to me, and also for anyone who's watching this and then decides, I want to do that. I've got nothing going on. So just DM me and I'll spend an hour with you on the phone helping you get going. Long story short, it just dawned on me. So we're in a period of time where people are going to be at home, and they should be at home for 2 weeks to 2 months. And my fear was that people would panic. And I felt there was an outrageous opportunity to take the people who literally lived around me, just the people I see every day walking their dogs, driving their fancy cars, you know, some of them in their 60s, some of them in their 20s, and say, what do you know how to do? What skills do you have? What supplies have you like stockpiled, right? And then do you have any type of medical equipment that could help us? Medical equipment can be as simple as a blood pressure cuff or a thermometer. It, you know, supplies can be food or sterile wipes. And skills can be, you could be an EMT or you could be a nurse, you could be a caregiver, you could be someone who makes meals. So with that, I thought to myself, okay, I know I've got these people. How do I organize them now so that they only have one of two functions? I can help or I need help, right? So right away. And then is there a tech solution that can back this up? Because I was also seeing people posting requests for help and people posting requests to volunteer all in Nextdoor, which is where my whole neighborhood's on Nextdoor. So again, Nextdoor and all the tools I'm going to talk about, you can use any tool systems you want. I'm not pro any one tool system. I think what's important is you've got people who need help and people who are willing to give their help. And you need to make them meet each other and then drive that. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. So with that context in mind and the background, why don't you show us what you've got?
Sure. So everything I'm going to show you now is available over at Airtable Universe. So you can just Google Airtable Universe. Airtable is also, as of yesterday, starting to put up more solutions around the COVID response. I think you were fortunate to get someone from Airtable on the show. So I'm sure they'll go over that. So this is just not my solution. There's a bunch of these. And before I go too far into that, also know that if you can use a spreadsheet, you can do this. So I'll go ahead and get into the system now.
Okay, right about here is where we switch to Chris's screen for a demo of the COVID-19 response template, which he built using Airtable, Nextdoor, and Zapier. You can go to our YouTube channel to view the demo. Just search for Codeless Podcast and Chris Dancy. You can't miss us. We'll also add links to the template in the show notes. Now, on with the rest of the show. Enjoy. That's great. So a couple of things I wanted to bring up. Number one is, when did you start building this? How long did it take you?
I'm really embarrassed. So we had to evacuate Disney World because they closed it, and I did it in the car. I took an hour to build it. I put it out long before people started using it. It was only when Nextdoor reached out to me that I actually published it to the universe. So it's been in universe, I think, for 3 or 4 days. And for the people who I'm customizing with one-on-one, I mean, they're up and running in 10 minutes.
This is impressive. So it seems like your stack is Airtable, Zapier. What's on your front end? Like, what's the web form?
The web form is Airtable. Airtable, so if I come in here, yeah, so you can see this information in this grid view. This is what we call grid view. You can have a form view. So you'll notice that the same information you've collected in a form. If I wanted to, I could actually add in fields from that grid to this form. So I could just drag it down here very simply. So if someone actually wanted to assign someone to manually, but I didn't want them to do that. We've got a grid view for our skills, just like the type of stuff you'd see. But then I can also say, well, actually, can you show me skills by type of skill? Can you show me equipment by equipment type? So we have equipment versus facilities versus medical supplies versus drugs, and then who has each of those?
Wow. Okay. All right. We've got David Peterson from London. Hey, David, are you there?
Cabin crew, prepare for landing. Thank you.
Yeah. I can hear you guys. Hi, this is David Peterson, and I work on partnerships at Airtable.
Yeah, David, thanks for joining us. Awesome to have Airtable on this episode with us. So I have Chris Dancy, and he's created this COVID neighborhood response template that he's using for his neighborhood, but can literally be replicated by anyone around the world. What's your thought?
Yeah, so yes, we Chris and I have been talking earlier this week, actually, and he was talking with a colleague of mine, Jason, as well. So thankfully, we heard about it. And I mean, it's really, really amazing to see what people have been building. Zooming out just a little bit, we started to receive inbound a little over a week ago from folks using Airtable for COVID-19 related projects, wondering if we could help in any way. And it was no question, we made Airtable Pro available to any group involved in any COVID-19 related effort, you know, on that day. And I should say, if you're listening, that describes you, please fill out the form at airtable.com/COVID-19 so we can get you set up. And especially if you're somebody who's kind of remixing what Chris has built, a great example, you should go to that form and fill it out. One of like the bright lights from this past week, which has been a pretty intense week, has been reviewing all of the different things that people have been building. So many communities coming together. The range is like totally staggering. So the first thing is exactly what Chris has done. I think we've seen 15 other communities come through showing us that they're building with what Chris has already built. It's templatized. They're taking what he's built and running with it. And they've signed up and got Airtable Pro set up and everything like that. But I kind of wanted to share some other examples of what people are building.
Yeah, please do.
Hopefully to inspire others of what's being built right now. Yeah. So one is like this project like diningatadistance.com. If you've seen that one, that's a big one. There's others. They're tracking 10,000 plus restaurants that are still delivering or offering takeout across, at this point, over 20 cities across the U.S. They're tracking it. Backend is all Airtable, and we're super excited to see that. And hopefully they can kind of keep bringing that to more and more cities globally. There's a group coordinating 3,000 plus volunteers in New York City who are delivering groceries to the elderly and compromised. There's a group that's coordinating foster families for animals at shelters before the shelters have to shut down due to local work from home or shelter in place regulations. So there's just like an amazing range of projects that people are working on. And that actually brings me to one other point that I wanted to make quickly, which is, I think, again, Chris is kind of leading the charge here. This coming week, we really want to start publishing projects, promoting projects that people are working on, either those that could benefit from more publicity because they're trying to get donations or volunteers, or those that are templatized and can be, you know, duplicated and brought to other communities. So if you're working on something, reach out, let us know, make sure that we can start promoting it. If you're building off of Chris's thing, reach out, let us know. We want to promote it. And last but not least, more generally, if you run a business that uses Airtable, has been hit hard by COVID-19 due to demand or supply side shocks, you're struggling, reach out, let's discuss. You can email us at covid@airtable.com. We're kind of funneling all of the requests. So we want to talk to you and make sure people, you know, are able to keep the lights on.
So basically you're going to have like a showcase of all these different implementations people are building on Airtable.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can see there's on Airtable Universe right now, we actually have a category that's starting to track it, and we're going to blow that out even more. I think the power of these like no-code tools like this is that anybody can take them and start running with it. And when you open source the template, like what Chris has done, that lowers the barrier even more. And now is the time for us to steal with pride, right? Like, let's share, let's open source, bring this to every single community across the world.
David, for people listening to this podcast, tell us a little bit about Airtable, what you do there, and how you got there.
Oh, yeah, of course. I work on all sorts of partnerships at Airtable. So a variety of strategic partnerships and growth-oriented partnerships, and with some of our enterprise customers. And I guess my quick background, I've always worked in tech, started in kind of big tech at Google, and then a few startups, seed stage venture, then started my own thing. But the thing that I started, I realize now, was no code before no code had a name. It was Airtable, like V1 Airtable that I found on Product Hunt back in 2015, taped together with Zapier, kind of hacked together in a weekend. And I totally fell in love with the product, honestly. I realized the power of it because it enabled me to build this business. So I was lucky enough to join the team a few years ago. And it's been amazing to be at a company, you know, that's building a product that I kind of truly saw the value of myself. Yeah, so I think, look, the way that Chris described it, Chris, you were spot on. I think that the way he described it, though, is a good way to start, which is it looks like a spreadsheet. It's as inviting as a spreadsheet, but it's actually a database. There's a strategic reason for that. Spreadsheets are an original no-code software. Almost everybody knows how to use a spreadsheet. You land in a spreadsheet and writing a formula in Excel, like that's coding. There's a reason that we kind of started with spreadsheets as the entree into the space. And because Airtable is a database, I think it's particularly good at organizing information and representing processes. You know, there's a lot of like human processes that power your work every day. And Airtable is particularly good at providing some structure to those processes and making them machine readable too, turning them into an API. So then you can integrate with other tools. And now all of a sudden, like that software, like you may, maybe it doesn't have a UI yet, right? It's just the database layer, but you really have just built software. So that's kind of the way that we have entered into the no-code space, I would say, is almost from the bottom of the stack. We're the database, and there are other folks who are kind of in the middle somewhere, like Zapier or Integromat or Parabola, and others that are kind of at the top, like Webflow. But that's kind of where we see ourselves, and the vision is how do we keep on moving up that stack and kind of taking more pieces and making them work more seamlessly with that foundational layer of the database.
Great. Thank you. So what I want to do now is I want to move into introducing Armel.
Hi, my name is Armel Baudry-Kembe. I'm based in Toronto, Canada, and I'm the CEO and founder of Treble FM, a platform that makes it easy to create, share, and listen to shortcasts.
Basically what Treble is, it's a platform that makes it easy for people to stay informed on topics that matter to them in a short amount of time every day. Treble is there to help people get what they need as fast as possible. The interesting part about Treble is that not only you can consume that content using what we call shortcast. Basically, a shortcast is a very short podcast. So it's usually 2 to 3 minutes long. And so we have an app that you can download on iOS and Android. You can also do it from the web, which allows anybody to record those shortcasts. So for example, let's say you are an expert in, I don't know, babysitting.
Let's say epidemiology.
Here you go, that makes more sense. Then you can create a shortcast on Treble and kind of help people know what they need to know about it by you being an expert, kind of tapping into the information that they need to know in order, for example, to be able to deal with the COVID-19 stress happening. So I had one person on the platform, he's a doctor. And he created something around COVID-19 to help people on a day-to-day basis, give them little tips that they can apply, getting healthy, staying active, or just what you eat. I wouldn't be able to do that because I'm not a doctor, but someone like him can do that. And then with the Treble platform, he's able to record the content, publish it in like 2 or 3 minutes. It doesn't take that much, but then when you see the impact that it has for other people that can consume that information easily, that's kind of why I do what I do every day.
That's really good to hear. How is COVID-19 impacting you personally and professionally right now? Like what's going on?
I'm always traveling, most of the time working from home or from the office. Honestly, for me, I'll tell you, I can feel everything around me is different, but for me, it's not that different. But I think there's a lot of information out there and it can get people really stressed. I think maybe I've been a little bit sheltered from that because I guess I use the app Treble and I just get what I need to know what's going on without being kind of overwhelmed, I guess. You can tell there's a different vibe. I'm on the Canadian side, so on the other side of the border. So maybe the reality is a little bit different than the US, but I can tell you that it's a different vibe.
Chris, what about you? Personal, professional impact of COVID-19? How is it affecting you?
Wow, it's bad. I'm not going to lie. My two big seasons are fall and spring, and I just lost half my year's income. So everyone canceled, and I had contracts that could have forced them to pay me. And I told all of them, you don't worry about it. don't send me money, you take care of your business. I've tried to manage my finances in such a way that I can make it till fall. But I mean, I'll be blunt, I don't think I'll recover. I think I'll probably have to sell some things and do some stuff like that. I mean, we're talking like $80,000. That being said, I'm 52. I've seen drama. I lived through AIDS, right? I buried friends and lovers. I've lived through a couple economic fallouts in the United States. I've been super successful at rock star companies, and I've been in the bottom of the barrel. So I guess if there's one thing I can share with anybody who's listening, if you're on the low end right now, don't worry. Everybody is, just some people aren't admitting it. And if you're on the high end now, help the low end. And that doesn't mean showboating. I mean, that means giving away your time. That means giving away your skills. That means taking care of those people around you. As far as the information overload, I call myself a mindful cyborg. One of the things I've done, because I am so overly connected to not just information, but information about myself. So I use a bunch of services that actually remove attention bias. So on Facebook, Twitter, and things like that, I have two services I use that remove the likes, comments, and retweets and time. So I don't, my eyes aren't trained to go to what's peaking. That's one set. That's the software stack. The other part of that is behavioral. If you saw Facebook without dates or likes or comments, it's real usable. It's like suddenly really refreshing again because you're friends with people, not popularity. The second part of that is behavioral. So I don't follow really anyone in any of these social networks. It's how I manage my attention, because how my attention is my happiness. And the last piece of this is I actually follow people and connect to information I don't agree with. So for instance, if you look at YouTube, I watched this guy named Dr. John talk about COVID. He's an English retired nurse, very calm, very slow. But I also listen to Peak Prosperity, which is basically doom and gloom, right? So I think you've got to systematically re-understand what you follow and how you follow it, where you can't help it because it's normal to want to look at popular things, put software in place. Where you can help it, follow information you don't agree with. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. Okay. You're just working with what you've got to increase your overall happiness, period.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. David, coming to you, personal and professional impact in these times.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, I haven't been personally affected as of yet. You mentioned I'm coming from London. That's true. I actually just moved here about 6 weeks ago. And this may be the weirdest possible time to move to a new city, let alone a new country. So thankfully, we're safe and healthy and now just exploring every nook and cranny of this new flat that we just landed in. So the timing is actually was incredibly fortuitous. We ended up, you know, moving basically, I don't know, 3 or 4 days before things kind of took the turn in our general consciousness and certainly in Europe. So we feel incredibly thankful that we got in right under the wire. We stocked up on food and have chairs, the things that you need, especially now that we're all working from home. That's actually incredibly important. So yeah, thankfully we're all set. And on the professional side, you know, I think at Airtable, we're just really focused right now on how we can support all of the folks out there who are either running businesses that are really impacted, but are, you know, this is a shock. This isn't, the underlying business is still strong, right? Those restaurants and bars and all the second order impacted businesses, those are strong businesses. It's just, there's a huge demand and supply shock on both sides, right? So we want to make sure we are supporting them as much as possible and supporting the people who are donating their time, their skills, their energy to trying to find a solution or providing relief to their neighbors, making sure that they can use Airtable if it would be at all helpful. So that's a really big focus right now.
Got it. Thanks for sharing that.
If I can add, I mean, I was really impressed. I don't know anyone at Airtable. I just talked to them for the first time this week. And I mean, within a few days, I mean, not only did they publish my template and promote it, which again, I'm not making any money, it's a template, right? And I don't need any press. But what I was really blown away by was how quickly, I think within 3 conversations, they said to me, can we give you a break on your fees for Airtable? That was just the kindest thing in the world. They didn't know anything about how badly I was impacted by this financially. I mean, luckily for me, I did a video with this like amazing YouTuber where I've got like $1,000 in credit, so I don't need it. I should have said yes, but I'm so incredibly impressed. Because I see two types of companies out there right now, right? There are see people kind of exploiting this for their own kind of personal company branding. But I think it's one thing to offer free tools. It's another thing to basically pay people, right? It's another thing to do the types of things that actually impact day-to-day lives. I think free shoes are wonderful. I think telling everybody every 5 minutes you're giving away free shoes looks like an advertisement. So I think there's a very fine line when we look at people's attention versus what's being said out there. And I think people need to tread very carefully because you don't want to exploit a disaster for any type of attention gain.
I just want to quickly, if I may, quick second what Chris said and me running trouble, but that's the first thing that I didn't want to do because I feel like I see exactly what Chris is saying, which is you see certain companies. I think there's a fine line was like helping versus like, you know, taking advantage for your own gain and say, oh, this is an opportunity for me to kind of grow my business. But like, it's a real thing happening. I think people should be kind of more careful about how they deal with it. For example, for travel, I figured, well, people already get way too many information on COVID-19. If you're going to send them, even if it's like a digest of 1 or 2 minutes, it's not necessarily going to help them. It's just going to stress them more. So I think people got to be careful and kind of really think of like, is what we're doing, is that really helping people more than that kind of helping ourselves, right?
So, you have to. Exactly, yeah. What Arnell said. You have to ask that question. Is this helping someone or is this getting attention? I must have had 600 emails on my inbox over the past week from different companies telling me how they're responding. I don't need to know how you're responding. I need time with my family, right? And there's all these CEOs who are saying, I'm not taking an income. Well, good. I know that your hotel chain is suffering and I know you're not taking income, but how about the same press release that I'm giving away rooms in the hotel to nurses and doctors near hospitals?
Chris, you said it, Armel, you've emphasized it. It's like this is an opportunity for us to recalibrate our actions in line with our core value and mission. Chris, I wanted to ask you, so right now, I know Airtable's on the call. We didn't reach out to Nextdoor. I didn't have the connections. But my question for you is, what's been the response from other companies whose tools you're using?
I didn't reach out to Airtable or Nextdoor. It was just kind of one of these weird things where it aligned. By the way, if you're new in business or you've been in business for a while and you want to know if you're doing the right thing just shows up. You don't do it, right? So I know Wade over at Zapier. I knew Wade when it was just Wade and a few people. You know, Wade ran most of my life when I was becoming popular in the beginning of the last decade. Again, I'm hesitant when I hear from companies because, again, I think it's really important that it's about empowering people. So to answer your question, I really haven't heard from anyone else. I've heard from lots of people who live in neighborhoods who want to use this and they work at big companies. I work here, I work there.
But yeah, again, tell us about that.
The hard part about that is I've got people who basically, I'm not lying, have never seen a spreadsheet, to people who have some experience and some database, but like Airtable just blows. It's like they can't wrap their head around like a record. They don't understand that a line is a record. And then I've got people who literally are like Airtable Kung Fu, who, you know, they're just like, why isn't Airtable doing this? Like David said earlier, if you think about software as Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? At the bottom, Maslow's hierarchy of needs are the things that have to be done. Like you have to have shelter. Then you have to kind of have food and a job before you can like, you know, fall in love and start making paintings. So it's been overwhelming that way because I have to constantly recalibrate. The other thing is, you'd be shocked how many people you end up helping who actually need more than just Airtable help or more than just no-code help. They literally are afraid. They literally don't have money. They're watching their world fall apart. So I'm also very careful about downplaying or talking evil about distractedness, right? Because I think distractedness can be an amazing tool for depersonalization or derealization when things become overwhelming. We do this with PTSD, we do it in our minds. But I will say it's been a real balance between calibrating myself to be where people need to be, not only technically, but emotionally, because I don't want to seem like I'm just here to build tools. I mean, at the end of the day, we all have to die. Everything else is a choice.
Correct. It's interesting how in this environment where I guess prior to COVID-19, it seemed like everyone was kind of just in their own sandbox doing their own thing. And now in COVID-19, even though we're social distancing, these tools or like this new situation brings us all together. Like I've never talked with
David, or I've never talked with Chris. And now all of a sudden we're all like in this together trying to figure it out. That's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, this is also on the heel of, we've spent 3 years telling people they're broken if they look at their phones too much, that they're somehow less human if they answer an email during dinner. We've spent a lot of time telling people how horrible they are for how they use technology and not even thought about what's going to happen if they're dependent on it. Because I'll tell you right now, at the end of life, everybody's on a machine all the time. We call it a ventilator. Everybody's being monitored with all their stats all the time. We call it all sorts of things that happen. And I think, I really hope we use the situation to reevaluate how we talk to each other about technology. This will go away, but the judgment and shame we've been taught to have about how we use technology is pervasive and will last much longer, and it needs to stop.
I want to come back to that. There's actually like a topic where I want to focus on that. But this show, of course, is about no code and how it's unlocking creativity and transformation in people. So what I wanted to get into is just discussing the no code trend, perspectives, developments, and in a sense, like predictions on the impact of no code on different things like work from home to entrepreneurship. So with that being said, I'd like to make this segment a freestyle, and just anyone want to talk about just no code and its impact on anything?
That's big, big question. I can jump in on one thing. So you talked about work from home, that kind of spurred a thought for me. I wonder if we're really going to see a lot of innovation in managing asynchronous work right now. So something a little bit different than Slack, we're all typing at the same time, but actually managing asynchronous work. Chris seems to appreciate this idea too, because I'm seeing this a lot where we're all working from home and people have lives outside of work that all of a sudden are coming together with their work lives. They have kids that they need to take care of because the schools are closed, and they have family members, older or younger, that they also need to take care of. And I've recently moved, as I said, from kind of the home office to a satellite office. And it's amazing how much process isn't documented. It's actually just like, you don't notice it when you're in the same place, but you just like tap somebody on the shoulder to get that thing approved, to go to the next step, right? There's so much work process that isn't documented well. And now I think we're entering a world where we need to document it all because we won't be able to get anything done otherwise. And this feels like a step change different than something like Slack, which is like synchronous communication. We're just chatting with each other. So I think the tools that enable asynchronous work are going to win. And I think no code is probably a big part of that.
You're saying that there's an opportunity here.
I think it's not just an opportunity, it's a necessity. We're going to be in this situation for months. I think for people to feel productive, which is such like an important part of getting up in the morning, I think we're going to need to figure out a way to manage work better. So I don't know if that's a no-code product opportunity. I do feel like that's just a problem that we're all going to need to solve together.
Armel, you want to chime in?
Yeah, so for me personally, I feel like I'm the outsider in the room because I'm the only one, I guess, probably that writes a lot of code. But I've heard of no-code. I've seen bursts here and there how this affects people. But seeing Chris talking earlier, it really kind of, and kind of showing how he was using Airtable, it really kind of showed me really the true power of where things are really heading. And I think it's really amazing, honestly. Because being in my bubble, even with travel, I don't usually say no code. I just kind of really kind of go to what's the value that this is offering people, right? Without kind of putting a label of the technology around it, because I guess for me, technology always seemed to be a kind of like a background thing. So it never really part of the conversation. But I think the no code movement, I think just like David said earlier, I think it's going to be big. I think it's just growing over time. Personally, for me, it's just amazing to see other people being able to create without having to write code. And just 2 days ago, I was talking to a friend, and he's running a startup, thinking, you know, maybe I should learn how to code. And I said, well, I can tell you, in this day and age, trust me, like I know how to code, and I can tell you, I use some tools, although I know how to code, and I'll tell you, there's no reason in 2020 for you to actually learn how to code. Because there's a lot of great tools there that can allow you to do most of what you need to do without having to write code. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, Armel, that made me think of something. So there's this Microsoft developer, Charles Simony, who developed Microsoft Word and Excel. He had this great phrase. He called software engineers unwitting cryptographers. They gather requirements and knowledge from the clients and then literally like hide that information in all the implementation, which is code. Like it's hidden away. And I think what you're hitting on, it stuck out to me, is that with no-code tools, the people who understand the problems best are now empowered to build the solutions. That's kind of like what, Chris, what you did. Like you saw the problem, you had the tools at your fingertips, and then you could build the solution. And I feel like this is kind of a microcosm example of what we're going to see explode in the future. You know, my prediction would be an explosion of B2B SaaS businesses that are built by founders who are literally hiding in plain sight around us. It's the people who, you know, aren't the software engineers necessarily. They're the people who are deep in industry, in functions that are underserved by software, right? And they experience problems every day. They never had the tools to solve them, but they probably have the idea of how to solve it because they've experienced the problem so deeply. And now all of a sudden they have tools, they build something, and some percentage of them are going to realize they can sell this. Like they can actually turn this into a product. And then it's just going to be,
you know, a thing or two about that, don't you, David?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sounds like an origin story buried in there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And hopefully many more origin stories, right? Like I really think that we're not there yet, but I feel like you see so many stories exactly like what we're talking about here. And they all feel like it's foreshadowing the next 2, 3, 5 years.
I want to talk about two things. Armel, I think, is so on the money, and I'm probably going to say something controversial. Imagine that. But yeah, I don't think you need to learn how to code. I think coding will seem in 10 years like a skill like learning the typewriter is now. Right? I think we're past that. But if you just look at where we are and back up a decade by decade, you can say, okay, this is so much bigger. So I'm going to go backward and then go forward 20 years, right? So no code in 2020 is what mobile was in 2010. It's out there, people are using it, they're creating unique things, but we haven't really exploited what a tool with smartness can do yet, location, sensors, et cetera, right? And no code's exponential ability moving forward will be based on how all of our individual micro solutions line together. But you couldn't have had mobile unless you went from 2010 to 2000 with the explosion of the internet, right? So the internet and cloud-based computing really gave rise to mobile. Mobile would have been impossible, just like no code today would be impossible. If you go back before that, you get into just basically operating systems in 1990, back to just machines in 1980, back to mainframes in 1970, right? So you're going to have this complete hopscotch moving forward as far as the eye can see. The power here is to say, well, what comes next? Because everyone's always like, well, what do I do if that's the case? What's the next hopscotch? First off, I think if we went out to 2030, maybe 2040, I envision something called a habit store. And a habit store looks and functions a lot like Etsy. You've got people who are interesting, who have a skill. That skill can be making a piece of art. That skill can be attending to their family. It can be gardening, whatever. But Etsy is full of people who have amazing skills from t-shirt making to leather design, right? But instead of skills, they're ways of living. Right? So people who've mastered financing, people who've mastered their physical health, people who've mastered their mental health. And what you would do in this world is you would go onto this habit store, you'd say, I want to learn to think like Chris Dancy. And you download this habit. And then what you get is a set of preferences that integrate to every tool, right? How I use Airtable, how I answer email, right? Everything. It's just like signing into Netflix now when someone else has been using your account and you're influenced by their taste. This is kind of where we're heading.
Okay, so you're saying I'm going to sit down and download a skill like the Matrix, or yeah. I'm going to like upload my consciousness like an Altered Carbon type episode on Netflix.
Let's not go all Elon here, okay? I mean, all right, so I still think the habit store is about a decade away. Now, because of BCI, brain computer interface, maybe what you're talking about is at least the beginnings of that is possible. But if we look at the next 10 years, this is the decade of makers where we start to merge technology and biology with behaviorism. And we start empowering people to be their best cyborg. And I don't mean that as in some type of dystopian, you're not a human. I mean, I feel I'm probably the most human people have ever seen. I can tell you right now, there's a lot of technology running this bad boy, right? And I think we have to start wondering, now that we have monkeys in cyberspace, what can we learn, right? How do we actually start to navigate a world where you realize when you put anything online, people are being influenced by it, right? I can see laws against attention abuse. I can see laws against a type of behavior and algorithms that skate around behavior. Now, right now we call that deplatforming and things like that. But if you marry this to the no code movement, what you're gonna see is people who literally start to adopt no code assisted habit lifestyles. I mean, right now it looks very businessy, but look at the other side of it. It's not. I mean, people are starting to behave like other people. And we're already being influenced by this, but we're being influenced by code, right? How you're influenced by social media and what you watch on Netflix is behavioral coding. It's just you're not in control. No code gives us the opportunity to exploit and share our values and beliefs with each other on demand.
Yeah, David, you want to go ahead?
Oh, no, I have no comment other than my picking my jaw back up off the floor after that. That's fascinating. I'm going to need to think on that. And Chris, you and I should chat later. That's what you're saying.
I'm pretty easy to find.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Yeah.
So I was just going to say, I feel like no code, I'm going to use an analogy, hopefully it helps. It's like, it's a new branch of life that's opening. It's a new way of thinking to allow people that not necessarily know how to code or create technology to leverage technology to solve problems. I think that's really what this is about. And the way I see it, I think it's just going to continue to evolve and we're going to see the impact that it has on other people. But I think the way to see it is just like I see today, you have mathematics, you have physics, and then you have biology. Physics is built on top of mathematics. So I don't know how long ago you had people that just do mathematics, and then the people start doing physics, and then there's electricity, like all those things are kind of built up each other. Now, the thing that you don't want to forget, that's why I don't want people, I might kind of sound like a weird, maybe controversial to say here, is to see the no code as this is going to be the entire world. But I think the way to kind of see it is that this is a new branch opening the world. Just like today, there's still physicists, there's still mathematicians. All those things need to evolve for you to continue at the upper end of the scale to continue to also grow. Well, so for example, when you see LTE, right, this is the underlying technology growing and empowering other people at the top, right? I think is really impressive with no code, because unlike the other technology stack, for example, we talk about mobile, you still needed to know how to code. The good analogy that I like to take, for example, which is, seems you know, trivial, but I think is very interesting to also pay attention to, is I remember when YouTube came in. A lot of people now want to see YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all those kind of social media where you have creators. Even with podcasting a little bit today, we have creators being able to express themselves. Before you only had TV, that doesn't mean TV and radio table wasn't good. It just, again, was a limited factor, or very limited to what you can get. And then YouTube, for example, came in, and then it opened the door for a lot of people to do a lot of things that you couldn't have in the world. And I don't think we can imagine a world without YouTube today. The same way I think, you know, 10 years from now, we wouldn't be able to imagine a world without that kind of no-code movement, how it kind of changed the world. But I think that's the way I see it. And I think that's just the power that I see in it, really.
So I did an episode, I think it was number 8, with Kirby Ferguson, who says basically everything is a remix, right? And we're essentially talking about this remix methodology in the sense of the whole body of knowledge on a chronological basis are like just different layers that are sitting on top of each other. And this stack doesn't stop. It just keeps getting better and better. And we're building on top of that. With reference to that, Chris, I want to ask you, if we're just remixing stuff and getting better and better at it, what are some ideas you could give other makers? Because I'm sure there are a lot of ideas floating around, but some of our listeners are literally starting their no-code journey and they're trying to figure out like how to make something that's meaningful. Can you use your experience to talk about that and give us some ideas?
Sure, I'll just give you real quick. First of all, I don't want to go into any individual ideas. If someone's listening to this, DM me. I'll talk to you on DM or phone. I think the world is full of good ideas and no good problems. And COVID has actually united a good problem behind a bunch of good ideas. I'm really tired of good ideas. We can solve problems now. But I will say that if you're just getting started in your journey, a couple things that you need to know is don't be worried about explosive growth or explosive attention or explosive success. If you're helping someone and you can put food in your mouth, you're literally doing more than most of the entrepreneurs, successful people I know, right? Because they're just literally responding to meetings and creating Word documents, right? So focus on small and really fast. The other thing is don't be married to one particular tool set. Like if you put all of your life in Google Sheets or all of your life in this product or that product and it goes away, it's really hard. So be functional in your requirements and be flexible in your desires. And I think you will win. I mean, now is your time. Everyone, I'm referring to this period of time as the great leveling. Everyone is coming kind of into line with what's important. Use that as your jumping off point. And last but not least, learn Maslow's hierarchy of needs and design solutions at the bottom. No one needs a better filter. No one needs a better location tracking system to suggest food. No one needs any of that. They need to know where they get a place to sleep, where they can get a job, and where they get bed. And the world is dying because we're more worried about the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the actualization stuff, and not focused on the bottom. And I think it's time we start helping each other. Big brother can be big mother very easy. We just need to focus on which gender we're programming.
That's good. David, I'd like to turn to you, and just based on how much time you have on the call, two things. Number one, add whatever comments you wanted to add. But before you leave, the most important question I ask every guest on this podcast is, what's a question I didn't ask you that you wish I did?
Oh, man. Well, something is coming to mind from what Chris was saying. So just to add on that first, I totally plus one all of that. We're in a great moment in so much as there are a lot of problems that are coming into stark relief right now. And so as entrepreneurs, as makers, there are problems out there aplenty, you know, so put your effort after them. And the other thing kind of from a no-code point of view that I would push on is figure out how to solve it for one person with your effort and then see how can I to solve it for two, you know, what about four? Like, how can I take at the edges, at the margins to start automating stuff and scaling it? But I think now is the time to, quote, do things that don't scale and then figuring out how to use these tools to start scaling it up. And honestly, Airtable plus Zapier is enough to run million-dollar companies alone. So that you have a long way to go before you're going to reach any limitations with some of the simple tools that we're talking about here. And man, what question did you not ask me that, let me think, that's a good one, Edmund. let me see. Well, we didn't talk about any books that we're all reading recently, which is one of my favorite conversations. Maybe we can get everybody to give what's the latest book you're reading that's really impacted the way you think?
All right. Okay. I'll go first. So the latest book that I'm reading that's impacting the way I think, it's one that it's kind of like, I guess on Twitter/no code, it's kind of like our no code like rule book. And it's called Atomic Habits by James Clear. And basically the reason why this book is so important is there are a lot of like themes in it, but the reason it's so important, especially in no code, where you have a new trend that for in some ways can kind of overtake the zeitgeist and everyone thinks like this is a catch-all solution for everything. There are a lot of people that want to participate that can't, either because they feel they don't have the technical knowledge or can't because they just don't understand how to get from zero to one. Most people want to get from zero to hero. And Atomic Habits is literally just about adopting like little rituals and habits, like the most mundane and tiniest and unnoticeable things that can lead you into being the best version of yourself. And so it's a book that one of my friends actually gave me as a gift, and I've been reading it and just like really trying to apply it.
I've heard amazing things about that book. The one that I would mention, since I forced this question upon the group here, I can jump in next. The one that I would call out is, just read a few months ago now, Billion Dollar Whale, which is about I almost don't want to give away too much because this is a book that will be a movie and will be a book about the making of the movie and everything. It's a fascinating story of like of financial mismanagement. And it's about like a sovereign wealth fund that's basically kind of taken over by a young entrepreneurial individual. And it's a fully true story, completely fascinating. Turns out that a lot of the money was used to actually fund Wolf of Wall Street, the movie. This money ended up getting into so many different parts of the economy. It's an interesting story of how fraud actually happens. And you'll read it and you'll feel like you're watching a movie. It's one of those books, which is always a lot of fun.
That's great. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. All right, Chris, you're up.
I read a lot. The one I just finished, I won't tell you what I'm currently reading because I can't really say anything because I'm not just in it. But the one I just finished last week that I am love is called Nine Pints. And it's about the history of blood, how blood has been used for surgeries, kind of our relationship with blood, medical, spiritual, everything else. It's ridiculous. It's so sick because it helps you start to think about blood in a different way. Author's called Rose George. But again, if you like kind of books that kind of merge science, technology, and spirituality, check out Nine Pints. And then Graham Hancock's one before that, After America, which is before America, I think it was. Just incredible. I mean, I could drop business books all day long, but if you really want to free your mind, check out Nine Pints.
Yeah. Good rec. Good recommendation.
Thank you. All right, Armel, you're up.
I guess I'm up next. I think the book that I read recently was an audio book. It was Angel from Jason Calacanis. So Jason gave the perspective as an angel investor. So it's mainly technically a book for people that want to know how to angel invest, but it also gives a good perspective of how founders think and how to identify a good founder and things like that.
Great. So, that makes sense. Thank you. All right, David, listen, it was really, really fun having you. We look forward to hearing more about Airtable's contributions, and I'm looking forward to posting a link to that showcase and putting it up with the show notes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds great. I'll follow up on it. And thank you so much for having me. It was great to chat.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you, David.
All right. See everybody.
Okay, so we've come to the end of this episode, but as you can tell from the way it ended, David Peterson from Airtable only left. Chris, Armel, and I hung out and talked about how technology is evolving along the human stack, from time and location to behavior and biology. We spoke about opportunities for no-code to utilize these interfaces to make the information around us more useful with ambient feedback. So I know that sounds like a lot, but just come back next week and hang with us and you'll hear more. As is usual, there are summaries and predictions on no-code after the closing credits. Now back to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's really important that we all stay safe during this very precarious time. And I'd like to advise you to follow the guidelines in your country to stay safe and help us all flatten the curve. Please rate and review us on your favorite listening platform. It helps us get discovered by more people who want to unlock creativity and accelerate transformation. You can reach me on Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Instagram through the Codeless Podcast handle. Just search for the word Codeless and podcast, and you can't miss us. All music provided through the appropriate licensing and permissions. Big thanks for the music to Steph Skilly, Bobby Odsock, RMark1313, Raising Sounds, and prod.nocredit. You can find more information and links in the show notes.
Hi, my name is Chris Dancy. I live in Houston, Texas. I'm known as the world's most connected person. Over the past decade, no-code has transformed not only businesses, but individuals. We've seen companies with giant SaaS-based solutions, software as a service, upend traditional premise-based software. What the web did in the year 2000 and mobile did in the year 2010, no-code will do for software in the year 2020. Over the next 10 years, no-code will empower individuals, businesses, and even everyday folks who've never even thought about technology. to start to create hyper-personalized solutions. Any workflow, process, or even habits will be able to be transformed, codified, and downloadable. I imagine a habit store in the future where anyone can download codeless solutions to empower and redefine their life.
Hi, this is David Peterson, and I work on partnerships at Airtable. I think the real power of no code is people getting more bang for their buck out of their computer. And if I look at the last decade, I feel like the last decade is the decade of the WYSIWYG editor. And it's empowering more people to design elements that they can then share, design websites that they can share. I think moving forward, it's going to start being full stack software. I think in the future, we are going to see an absolute explosion in the number of small B2B SaaS companies. This will be driven by thousands and thousands of more people being empowered to build software who before just had no way of doing it. But they work in industries that are underserved by software and see these problems face to face every day.
Hi, my name is Ahmed Abodrikembe, and I'm the CEO and founder of Treble FM, a platform that makes it easy to create, share, and listen to shortcasts. If I had to summarize the impact that no-code has had in the past decade, I would say that no-code has empowered individuals who didn't know how to code, but have identified problems in the world that requires the technical solutions to be able to build those technical solutions, and even in some cases, sell those technical solutions without needing to code them by themselves. I believe in the next decade, we'll see a wide range of businesses, small and medium businesses, built on top of no-code tools. Now, the other thing that I'm really excited that I believe will happen in the next decade is that we'll see a few important problems solved by people who have leveraged the power of no-code tools with the power of their creativity to solve those important problems.